this, if I may, and I'm looking now at the bill, 575, so that these sections do not take effect if the amendment, only if, they do not take effect only if the voters reject HJR 19 or SJR 23 if it's submitted to them. In all other cases, that does go into effect.
Okay, but I'm saying if it's not submitted, if it just
if it is not submitted,
here in
the bill
the legislature
takes effect
by itself, and the bill passes, then
the bill becomes effective. Yes.
Right. Okay, we got that one straight. All right, now let me see. Well, that was the big one that I had, and I know the chairman wants to move this bill out, so I'll just hold my other questions.
Your other question was on page 4 of 575, whether the language in there that says that it can be used for...
Oh, ferries.
For ferries.
Yes.
Whether that is restricted by the language in the constitutional amendment.
Yes. If the constitutional amendment takes effect... We have drafted sections 7 through 11 only to separate the existing tax from the new surcharge so that there's no confusion about what law, what the current law is that applies to which of those levies. We did not draft with an eye toward trying to unwrap references to highways and ferries in the event HJR 19 or SJR 23 takes effect. If one or the other of those amendments takes effect, the constitutional provisions would govern, and I would expect the legislature to have to go back into 4340, its old law, and catch it up to the constitutional amendment dedicated fund requirements, in which case, if your language in your constitution says separate funds for mode of transportation, you're going to have to go back and make sure that there are separate funds, that these things are not wound up, bound up together.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chenoweth.
To the drafter, does the language in the proposed constitutional amendment on page 2, lines 2 and 3 and 4, would that allow expenditures for maintenance of facilities such as bike trails that are adjacent to highways or safety improvements or other things that are related but not necessarily purely highways be permissible under the language of this amendment?
We've discussed that in response to an earlier question today, and my sense is that it's uncertain, but I think if asked to look at it, the court probably would take a very practical approach and probably distinguish on the basis of facilities within the right-of-way. If you've got a road with driveway connections and things of that sort, I think they would say, all right, you can use the money in the fund or the account for highway use for those kinds of things. I suspect that if you've got a bike trail in the same right-of-way, such as perhaps we have here in Juneau, I think you probably they might stretch to see that. I don't know that they would allow you to use highway transportation grounded money for the kinds of trails that you have up in Anchorage that are independent of, separate and distant from the road system that have a separate right-of-way system all their own. That's my reading of how it would fit together.
How about public transit?
I would say that would public transit would be covered.
Would be permitted.
Mm-hmm. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the drafter, wouldn't it be relatively simple wording to change section 14 to say that sections 1 through 6 does not take effect unless the voters approve a constitutional amendment?
Yes.
To dedicate the fund?
Yes. But that is not what I was asked to do. It could be done.
That and eliminating Section 17 would make it very clear to the voters that it wouldn't be in effect until they approved.
I agree with you. Okay. That was the way we're drafted.
You'd still need Section 4 and 6. You'd still need Section 17.
Yeah, reword it. No, you wouldn't need 17 because 14 would say it wouldn't take effect until approved. And if it was approved, then sections 15 and 16 would take care of it.
No, because sections 4 and 6 are the language that after the surcharge is eliminated in 96, these other the additional 1 cent goes into the dedicated fund.
Oh, I'm at section 16. I'm sorry.
Oh, right.
It has to be removed.
It could do that. I just think that's a... You know, I hesitate to say this. The power of taxation is something that should be considered and deliberated, and perhaps we ought to consider whether or not there ought to be a higher standard at the legislative level. But it's not something that I think is easily done. And for a legislature to give away the taxation responsibility only to a vote of the people, I think, not sure I'm characterizing this right, but in a representative form of government, we are the ones who ought to be and should be better able to determine the necessity for taxation. I mean, I think that's something that weighs pretty heavily on people's mind when you're dealing with taxation. And to say that you're going to vote on it, I think, sets a precedent of voting on all taxes. And I'm not sure that is appropriate. Representative Sharp?
I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. But in this situation, where we're going to the voters and asking them, do you want this put into a dedicated fund? And if you say no, we're still going to do it anyway. I don't think that's good public policy.
Well, that's not what we say, though. What we say is
taxes are going to go into effect.
No, this says that it goes into effect if it passes the legislature, and the constitutional amendment doesn't pass the legislature, which I don't think can happen. If it passes the legislature and the voters turn down the constitutional dedicated fund, this does not go into effect.
That's right. But there's no guarantee that, and that's the plan, to make marry these together, I thought.
That is the plan.
To put both things through. If one body fails to do that, why don't we pass through the one and say, when that chicken crosses the road, maybe the egg will follow. But I got a problem assuming that both are going to get across the road.
Well, I think the problem is...
Let's not even have 535 until next year.
Could I comment on that?
Mr. Turpin.
The governor has said that he will support the tax bill only if the dedicated fund passes. In other words, if the dedicated fund does not come out of the...
He'll veto this anyway.
He will veto the tax bill. And now we're putting people under the terms that, to me, makes sense. If you want the dedicated fund...
Representative Barney.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to point out to the commissioner that I stuck my neck way out there and voted for 574 to increase license tag fees, and the people aren't real happy about that. Can you imagine just how happy they're going to be? At every 10 gallons of gas they spend, they're going to pay an extra dollar in taxes.
We have a number of polls that mostly have been distributed by various legislators. I have them here if you'd like to look at them. That question has been put to their constituents, that if this includes a gasoline tax, will you vote for a dedicated fund? The replies have come back from 65% to 75% saying,
Mr. Chairman, I just point out to the commissioner that I survey my constituents, too. And my constituents say, no new taxes. No new taxes. And I've asked them about the sin taxes of alcohol, gasoline, but gasoline's alcohol, tobacco, and they say, no new taxes.
Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Chairman, are you ready to move these little puppies out?
No, there's Frank Dillon would like to testify.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to withdraw my request to testify at this time, please, in that confusion.
Can I just ask, if we pass this bill out, what kind of a grade we're going to get from the Truckers Association?
Well, if it goes with the dedicated fund, then they both go out, I think, the DRS.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
You mean I'm going to get something other than a C? I pay attention. I'm going to get even with
it. I forgot all about that. Yeah, we can buy a truck.
We should
be the same.
We have to rescind our action.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we rescind our action in adopting and passing out of committee the first CS for House Bill number 575, Finance.
Is there objection?
Mr. Chairman, I would then move that we adopt the Senate Finance CS for House Bill number 575, second.
House Finance,
correct.
Second.
Just so it's differentiated from the first one we passed out.
Right.
And
with the amendments that were adopted, the Brown Amendment on page 4, I think that's the only one. Is there objection?
Object.
There is objection. To the adoption of it?
Oh, no.
Okay. We have then the bill before us. Representative Boyd.
Mr. Chairman, I would then move that we pass it out of committee with individual recommendations.
And the accompanying fiscal note, we have a new fiscal note that shows... In your packet that shows an increase of $41 million in the gasoline tax after this year, 4.6 for the first year.
Mr. Chairman, we did have the amendment too in relation to the stationary power plant.
Yes, that's correct. There was an amendment to the stationary power plant. The stationary power plants for not for commercial sale. Is there?
It's not in there.
Is there? What's that?
You verbalized that amendment on the stationary power plants.
Right.
It's not physically here. He made a conceptual amendment.
Okay. Thank you. That'll work
out. It was not in the bill. It was verbalized. We added to the bill.
What
is it? Generating facilities that are not for commercial use but not for sale. The new fiscal note actually is $26.7 million this year, $42.8 million following years. Representative Boyer.
I've already made the motion.
The motion is to move the bill out of committee. Is there objection?
Without
objection, the bill moves from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Mr. Chairman, we're going to do the resolution. I would move that we adopt the House Finance Committee's substitute for Joint Resolution 19 and ask unanimous consent.
As amended.
As amended, just as we've amended it.
Is there objection? Without objection.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass the CS for House Joint Resolution 19 Finance Committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Is there objection? Without objection, the bill moves from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes. Meeting is recessed for the call of the chair.
Sexual harassment posting bill, it's SB 363. It's in your that's one that's not pulled out.
What's the number on
363? SB 363. It should be right in the front of your drawer.
$3 million for the district. And one,
oh, you're going to start.
And this is the other split. And there may be a higher one. What, if you might want to, you might just want to, what this is a full amount. And this is if it was split four ways, what it would be. Yeah, that's a Trail Corp prop thing. And you have no, you don't have to take any of these. I mean, I can tell you about all of these. This one was vetoed last year. I would say stay away from them. They want it in there, so it's fine.
I mean, people aren't going to bond for something. You know, that's what they think it is. It just doesn't work. So we're gonna they're gonna try out this other idea on a number of their people and see if they can't get them that direction.
You know, Houston, the other projects are these are the two that
are. Finance will come to order. Members present, Representative Sharp, Phillips, Larson, Boyer, Brown, and in a moment, hopefully, we'll be joined by Representative Kokanen. The first bill that we're going to take up this morning is the is Senate Bill 363. Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the time that you're taking this morning, considering you've been on the floor until late early this morning. 363 is requiring workplaces of 15 or more people to post a notice in a prominent location stating the federal definition of sexual harassment. Basically, it came about from the last year because of the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill hearings. Now the number of cases to the Human Rights Commission on sexual harassment has doubled in the last year from 14 to 28. There certainly has been a significant amount of confusion about what sexual harassment is in the workplace, and this bill is essentially to inform workers, you know, what sexual harassment is and what the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's definition of it is. And according to the Human Rights Commission, sexual harassment is believed to be substantially underreported. Senate Bill 363 would heighten the awareness of the problems for both employers and employees. It's supported by the Women's Political Caucus as well as the Human Rights Commission. It carries a $9,700 fiscal note, of which it's detailed in the back here. In the Senate, in the House Labor and Commerce Committee, I think they changed the They changed the sunset clause to 2007 from 1997. So they added 10 years onto the sunset clause. And did they make another change too? That's it. After all that, that's all they did. I'd be glad to answer any questions on the bill. It's basically just that it's a posting bill, essentially.
Are there questions of the sponsor? Representative Brown.
Are they required, are employers required to use the notice prepared by the State Commission on Human Rights, or just any notice?
They're supposed to use the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission definition of the of what sexual harassment is from that category. The Human Rights Commission,
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if on
Human Rights Commission would be preparing it, yeah.
And so it's probably not a major point, but in subsection A, an employer shall post in the workplace a notice that, whether we should say a notice prepared by the Commission on Human Rights that.
That's fine, if you wish.
If it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Probably doesn't hurt to stay
in. They could do their own. I mean, I think they could be in compliance if they did their own.
Mail them out.
So, Representative Brown, would you state the...
I'd move that on page 1, line 6, where it says, shall post in the workplace a notice prepared by the State Commission on Human Rights, would be inserted there. That, pick up the other language.
State Commission
on Human Rights.
Staff have that, I think, so. Straightforward.
Line 6.
Is there objection to the amendment? Without objection, then that amendment is adopted. Further questions? What's the interest of the committee? Representative Brown.
I move that we pass out with individual recommendations Senate Bill 363, Finance, as we've amended it with the accompanying fiscal notes.
House CS.
Is there objection?
Yeah, it'd be the House CS.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Larson.
No, it's going to be good.
Under contractual services, I noticed we got a camera. So if we see any sexual harassment, we take a picture, make up 500,000 copies, and send them out.
Okay, well, we'll keep that in mind.
Without objection, House or Senate Bill 363, CS Finance, moves from committee with individual recommendations and the company this morning.
Thank you very much, and thank you for not harassing me today.
The next bill we'll take up is Senate Bill 157, dealing with optometrists.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Martha Stewart. I'm an aide to Senator Adams. Senate Bill 157 is comparable to, has a companion House bill that you've already heard before. What this bill would do would allow optometrists to administer topical pharmaceutical agents. This bill has gone through some changes in committee. One of those is the addition of Section 1, which would allow optometrists to prescribe and use these medications. Section 2, there was a deletion that they would not be able to add oral medications or to use those. And those are the changes. I'm here for any questions you might have. There's no fiscal impact to the bill.
Representative Phillips.
They'll take this personally, okay? So this bill's been around for 12 years. I've been here 16. They got their, the use of pharmaceutical agents. They got that. Now they want a prescription. And, you know, we'll never, I just haven't. I knew this was going to happen. 12 years ago, if they got what they wanted, we'll be back with some more. Basically, it's a turf fight. And I just don't support it. I just don't support it. You know, I mean, from my perspective, these guys are eye specialists, not medical doctors. We have testimony that, you know, if for some reason you get an adverse reaction to a drug, that these guys are not medical doctors to take care of a heart attack situation. So it's just a personal thing, you know, for me as far as looking at this thing. But they keep encroaching and encroaching. I think there were four drugs. We gave them two. Now, I don't know how many they have now. Now they want to prescribe them. I just can't support it.
Representative Brown.
What training or education do optometrists have that qualify them to prescribe these pharmaceutical agents?
Through the chair. Optometrists go through after they get their basic graduate education, enter a program for optometry school. Those usually last 3 years. They have background, and in the course of that training, receive education on being able to make differential diagnosis of pharmaceutical courses. The kind of medications that are called for here in topical administration are things such as treatment for pink eye. They're not like invasive procedures, as opposed to ophthalmologists who have training in the whole body system. Optometrists have similar training that just focuses on diseases and disorders of the eye and appropriate treatment for those.
And that's what's referenced in 0872272 on line five of the bill.
That section of the bill allows them, it limits them to topical medications on the eye as opposed to oral medications that would have a systemic effect on the body.
You should have that that reference in your backup packet. I sponsored this legislation 3 years ago, and it passed the House and died in the Senate. This year, the Hess Committee sponsored the legislation on this side, and that bill is in rules and has been there for a month and a half, waiting for the Senate to decide whether or not to take some action. The compromise is before you in the Senate CS, and it was a conscious decision to let our bill sit, see whether or not the Senate, because the Senate had been the body to kill it, and keep it from moving. So they finally reached a compromise that was comfortable. I think the bill passed 18-0 on the Senate floor. Representative Kopanen.
Do you want a motion?
We'd entertain a motion.
I move that CS for Senate Bill 157, Labor and Commerce, be referred to that committee of referral and individual recommendation.
Okay.
For purpose of one more question.
Yes.
In the packet, I don't see any information from any state health agency or the Alaska Board of Optometry. Is that in here anywhere? I see from all other states, but a lot of other states, but I don't see anything from Alaska. Is there anything from the Department of Health and Social Services or West Virginia, Iowa, South Dakota, Massachusetts, Kansas? Is there any expression of interest?
Just hold that motion.
No. Don't we have an optometry board?
Yeah, we do. We have an ophthalmologist, too.
Mr. Chairman, the bill has been supported by the Department of Commerce, who would oversee licensing and oversees the Board of Optometry.
Is that documented here in the file anywhere? And also, don't we have a Board of Optometry? Is there any endorsement by them?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, it is endorsed by the Board of Optometry, and they would oversee the actual licensing for not all optometrists would automatically be allowed to prescribe the additional medications that are in this bill. They would have to pass an examination and be separately licensed by the Board of Optometry in order to take advantage of the additional privileges in this bill.
Let me ask this question. Do ophthalmologists support this? Ophthalmologists, do they support this?
Let me take a stab at this. I've played with this one now, as I say, for about 3 years. There are a couple of doctors, ophthalmologists, on the medical board, the state medical board, that do not support this. The I think in the packet there should be a statement from the Alaska Medical Association endorsing the bill in its amended form. Believe me, to be all very frank here, Rick Urien has been able to keep this bill from moving in the Senate, and the medical doctors are comfortable with the CS that came out of the Senate. While that's not to suggest that they have 100% agreement on things, but it does have a comfort level now by most medical doctors. And I would agree with you. I've characterized this bill as a turf battle all along, and it's got mixed reviews and will have mixed reviews. I agree that the issue has been around for years and years and years. Yeah, it's 30 other states have laws like this in place, and Representative Chair.
I would just rather have seen something from the state ophthalmology board, at least some expression of interest in this bill passing for us.
Optometrists?
I don't see it in here.
Optometry board?
Ophthalmologists?
Ophthalmologists have, it's the medical board.
Right.
Okay. And you said medical doctors, didn't you?
Right.
And the Department of Commerce? I don't see anything in here. And I don't see any documentation on that. No, I removed my objection.
Excuse me?
I removed my objection. I got my question asked.
Yeah. Representative Phillips, do you still have an objection? I think we'll get to this this afternoon, and we'll move it. And so we can have this debate on the floor, and I think that's what we prefer. There are only six of us here, and obviously we can't move things if there's objection. Stay firm.
Can the motion continue until our
right.
Form?
Right. It's a pending. We'll just keep the motion pending then, and we'll take
the next meeting.
It'll be this afternoon at some point.
Okay, so delaying it by 4 hours is not going to make any material
difference.
That's
right. We'll leave the motion to move the bill from committee with individual
recommendations.
Otherwise,
if it would, I'd just let it go, but just to have a fair vote on it. But I, frankly, am tired of dealing with this one. That's the problem with, you've been here for so many years, and you basically know what's going on.
History interfere with you.
that's why we like to do
it. Yeah, you got the term limits, so you won't have guys like me, objecting here.
Once we do it, it'll be over.
Is there objection to moving the bill from committee with individual recommendations?
Already had.
Without objection, the bill moves from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes. Thank you. The next bill we'll take up is Senate Bill 362. Senator Kraft.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for hearing this bill.
Do all members have that?
362. Okay. This bill is fairly self-explanatory. The process by which this bill is implemented is outlined in the fiscal notes from the respective departments, and the costs are minimal. The major objective of 362 is to involve more Alaskans in the voting process. By placing a couple of voter registration forms in the permanent fund dividend application, and we give people who haven't registered a chance to register and to vote. And then just another opportunity to do that. This bill has received support from all the committees that have heard it. And I think all that backup should be in the folder. Who's all heard this?
We've had the issue on the floor recently as well. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, let me just ask you this. I have a bill in this committee for a checkoff for the current fund dividend. And I do think the title could be used for it.
This is fairly narrow in requiring inclusion of voter registration forms.
With current fund dividend applications?
Representative Brown.
I was just wondering if any discussion or thought had been given to the possibility of doing this every other year, like in election years, as opposed to every year. Because it seems like the timing of the applications, they'd go out in the spring in the election year, that that that's really when it's most critical, when it's on people's minds. I'm just wondering how many people would do it in the off year. And although the cost isn't great, it is, you know, some amount of cost. And if we could accomplish essentially the same objective by doing it in the election years,
that would make sense. I thought it had a sunset in it, but just to see if it was even working. But I don't see it in here now. You know? Is it in the letter? Okay. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I sure do, yeah.
We could save the money and do it.
But look at that letter of intent. Can you see if that? I think in that letter of intent, it says, middle paragraph, or third, the second paragraph, at least 2 years, just to see if how it is working or if people are responding.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't get an answer to my question here. I mean, I think it can be.
I think for the municipality elections, too, and just to keep a more active, updated file addresses and so on. I think that's probably the reason.
Representative Phillips, we could get there fairly quickly if you have the drafter's name that drafted your piece of legislation, probably drafted this one as well. Just make a phone call to see if it fits under the title, and then we could entertain it if it does. If not, then it's
right. We'll find out because it doesn't say Surely, I just want to.
What's your number, Representative Phillips?
506. There's no citation for a number. I mean, title here. That's the problem.
Okay. Would you have your staff make?
Yeah, I will. I will.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Larson.
Look here.
I just had a real general question, and I think this is a good idea, and I'm wondering about how it would work. I know in order to register a person to vote, you have to be a registrar, and you have to have basically filed with the Division of Elections. By sending application forms with the permit fund dividends, I don't see anything in this that would call for a change in the election process. So the person would have the form, but how would they register?
Well, practically, anyone can self-register as long as you have two witnesses now.
Right.
And so you have to have two witnesses signing the permanent fund dividend application. The same two people, I would assume, would then sign your voter registration form. You don't have to be a registrar. You can self-register with two witnesses. Mm-hmm. Representative Kopanen.
There, one of the questions would be, would we change the application form for the permanent fund to leave a space for the voter registration number in case somebody's already registered?
I don't believe that's the intent.
No. Well, might be additional. Proof that the person is a resident of the state. That might be useful. Although that could be suggested to the, we don't have to require it, we can suggest it to the. Personally, of course, I'd like to see a requirement that you have to show proof of having voted if you're a voting agent to get your permanent fund dividend.
Well, if there are no further questions, we'll hold for just a couple of minutes.
Well, that's why I asked the sponsor. Courtesy. I mean, if somebody hung something on mine, I'd say, would like to have that. I'd like to have my opinion on it. Basically, I was calling Shirley. Basically, my bill, what it does is a $25 check off on a voluntary basis by a person for the promotion of man one. And that's what my bill does. It's in this committee right now. So if someone tried to hang something on my bill, I think I'd feel, pretty negative about it.
Yeah, I'm not real excited.
No, I can see that.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I pulled House Bill 506 that Representative Phillips is discussing here, and I don't think it fits under the Senate title. It would require a resolution changing the title. His title is an act relating to contributions from permanent fund dividends to be used for generating national support for the development of natural resources in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and providing for an effective date. That just doesn't fit under that Senate title. It's just a different.
I'd like to have this committee hear it. I've been asking for weeks.
House Bill 506.
Representative, I think probably,
you know, at least have a vote on it. You know, if I'm voted down, that's fine, but I just want to have a vote on it. And Senator, I mean, I respect, you know, from your perspective, if I was sitting there, I'd feel the same way. So you want this bill to fly without any hitches, I hear. I see it. So.
But I've got $25 that would help yours.
Hey, talk to these guys here and get it out.
Representative Sharp.
You ready for a motion?
Yes, I am.
Chairman, I move that we pass out the CS for Senate Bill 362, State Affairs Amended, with individual recommendations.
Mm-hmm. And the accompanying fiscal note?
And the accompanying fiscal note.
Is there objection? So moved. What about the letter of intent?
Do you have a letter of intent?
And the letter of intent with it.
To object to the letter of intent? Not objection, so.
Sure, you got to keep guys ordered and tagging things onto your. There's a whole host of things you can.
Speak 362,
hang on that
motion committee. The next bill we'd like to take up is HJR 2, Legislative Service.
Are we going to consider
HJR 2?
SB 2.
Not this morning. We need a broader discussion of that. But I spoke to the doctor about that.
Yes.
So we have a Senate bill dealing on the same subject?
Which one?
Is it in
committee?
In committee?
Senator Menard, I believe it's in committee.
Yeah. Over there.
We could ask Carol,
they
but I don't
pass it.
I don't think either body's.
You think 14 senators are going to vote for this? I mean, that's never happened in the time I've been here.
Oh, you never know, Randy. Strange year.
HGR 2. Well, as you know, this bill was introduced by Representative Navarre over a year ago, beginning of last session.
You want some amendments?
What I've prepared is an amendment that I think each of you have, which would make terms similar, would make each member of the House serve four-year terms rather than two- and four-year splits. So members of the House and members of the Senate would both have four-year terms. Each would only be able to serve for 2 4-year terms for a total period of 8 consecutive years. If a member then ran for the other body, it would allow for 2 consecutive terms or a total of no more than 16 consecutive or partial years in the legislature. And I'll offer that, move that for purposes of discussion. It would not affect the congressional term language, and also would add a new section that the clock would start ticking on the effective date of the act. Or of the amendment to the Constitution, so that current members, their time would commence at that point and not retroactively. Representative Phillips.
Well, Mark, I've always felt that 4 years is too long, and 2 years is too short. And I always felt that maybe 3 years is probably the happy medium for a House member, because, you know, let's face it, you only have 6 months to really do the work, which was from June to January of last year, because you're always running on a constant election cycle. I think 4 years is too much, and 3 years could be just right. You can have the elections during the first Tuesday in October when the municipalities have their elections for 40 minutes, or for 20 minutes.
The sittings of the life of a legislature would have to be 3 years.
They both could be three, though.
No, I think it can work. I haven't thought this out yet, but I always thought three.
Three and six.
No, too long for senators.
Three and what?
Three and four.
It would overlap the governor. It's not a bad idea.
Well, what I'm saying is that you could have 3 year, you know, okay, 3 year terms, okay? Secondly, the question is, when are you going to have the elections? Well, I'm saying have it first Tuesday in October in the odd year for that 3 year term.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, Jim and I just was reading that little book that Representative Foster had, and maybe we're going in the wrong direction. It says we should have election every year, because everyone knows that the legislature doesn't raise taxes on an election year.
Well,
on the other hand, everyone knows
the mechanics. The mechanics of it's rough, but I think the 3-year concept is probably beneficial to everybody. I mean, you as an individual legislator can do the work, as well as the people back home, have less elections to deal with. But I think 4 years is too long. I certainly know 2 years is actually what you're looking at is every other year faced with an election. So
I'm not sure what you mean by two. If it's okay for senators, why isn't it okay for House members? I think it's artificial. It's clearly artificial. We have such a small body. There are only 60 of us. We act right as a unicameral body the last 10 days.
Oh, you mean 3 years for senators as well?
No, I think whatever we do, it's artificial to split out one body over the other. And additionally, it creates this incredible campaign finance frenzy that's unnecessary. If you're really interested in dealing with campaign finance reform, 4-year terms or equal terms for members of both bodies clearly changes the dynamics of campaign finance in a way that, I mean, it eliminates a whole election cycle that we're used to now with the 2 and 4 year staggered terms. The amendment would put us on staggered terms, so you'd still have elections every 2 years, but you're not dealing with the same number of folks in each election cycle. Representative Larson.
Yeah, the sponsor of this resolution is also a sponsor of another, and I wish he was here because the unicameral approach is intriguing, and this seems to be changing the present and not moving towards something different, and I'm just wondering which one he really prefers.
Representative Sharp and then Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that stretching that your amendment speaks to a problem that the 4 years I've been here is obvious, and that is, it's hard to get any stability in the House with no continuity. Every other year, it's a rat race, and it's hard to get good people to run that wants to dedicate a whole year either down here or campaigning every other year. I think it's a good amendment.
Representative Brown.
Well, speaking of the co-chair's other constitutional amendment that we dealt with on unicameralism, I think that's a good idea. I think it has less chance of passage anytime soon because it's a more radical departure. It doesn't have the same amount of public attention and support that term limits does. Term limits is something that there's a lot of public interest in seeing, and so while the Representative Boyer's amendment in some way, it's kind of a partial fix of some of the things that are addressed in the others. I think it's a good idea, and I think I'm going to support this amendment. I did have a question about the language at the bottom of page 1 in this section 31, Terms of Representatives. The 1992 amendment relating to the term of representatives does not apply to the term of a representative in office on the effective date of the amendment. What I was wondering is whether we should clarify that. I presume that you're just speaking to the staggering of the terms there, or are you speaking to the limit on the number of terms and the number of years that can be served? In other words, if people are serving now, does this amendment apply to them?
Only in the future.
Only in the future. So it would be like everybody starts with 0 in the account and then counts from there. Is that how it's supposed to be?
That's right. You can go to your 65.
Does not apply.
Oh, jeez, I don't want to be here.
To the term.
You've already been here 16 years.
You don't need another. I've already overextended my invitation
right
here.
I'm not sure of the terms of art here. I ask that the clock not start ticking for anyone currently serving.
Where does it say that? That it doesn't start ticking.
It doesn't say it.
Well, it says
that's
the term of a representative in office on the effective date of the amendment.
And then the next speaks to the staggering of the terms as well.
Well, does it apply to a senator in office on the effective date of the amendment?
Just a House member. Hey.
See, the reason I'm thinking that this new language that's part of Representative Boyer's amendment was directed to the staggering of terms, not to the other issue of when does the clock start.
Oh,
I have a theoretical question here. Can you limit the terms of senators and leave it unlimited for House members? Constitutionally?
And why would we want to do that?
Because there's a lot more over there that's been there a lot longer than we have. I mean, can we do it? I mean, from a constitutional theoretical point of view?
I don't think it would pass.
I think Article 2 says that the terms are set by law. So
we could set it, right?
We could set it.
Well, tenure of legislators in Section 29 on page 2 of the bill itself says the 1992 amendment limiting numbers of years a person may serve as a legislator applies only to terms beginning after the effective date of the amendment.
Which version are you in?
Well, this is the bill. My amendment amends House Joint Resolution 2.
He's talking the amendment, so.
Right.
Kay's talking about the resolution stuff. She doesn't see it there.
I don't see it. Where is it?
On the top of page 2, HGR 2. Top of the page.
HGR 2 Judiciary?
Yeah. That's I was working off the original version.
Because it's not in HGR 2 Judiciary, I don't think. I'm pretty tired this morning, but yeah. I don't see it. See, they took that out in Judiciary. They took out tenure of legislators in Section 29. They took out the tenure sections.
Well, I suppose we could add it back.
We're gonna make the old Section 3.
Right, the old Section 3.
Because otherwise, Mr. Chairman, under the Judiciary version, it seems like it says, it states flatly, you know, no person may serve more than. And it doesn't, so you'd assume that if you've already served more than the limits that are prescribed, then you're not eligible to run, is how I would read it.
Right.
Maybe they just don't want to pass.
Yeah. Well, I think that what I would propose is that we deal with, my amendment avoids the issue of the congressional terms. I didn't want to get into the congressional piece of this. I was only focused on our tenure here. And so if we adopt the amendment, I think we should address the issue of tenure and put that back in. That's something that I think makes it more palatable, more possible for passage by a majority of members, or by the 27 on this side. Is there objection to...
I was going to make a motion, but I think you already moved it.
I was going to ask if there's objection to the Boyer Amendment. Well, without objection, that amendment is adopted. Now the issue of the tenure of legislators that had been in the original version, Section 3 of HGR 2 originally.
Pertaining to Section 29?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
just that portion.
It's the Section 3. If you go to the original version of the resolution.
But that's just Section 29 of Section 3 you're talking about, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I think that I think... either we jump into the whole issue of the congressional stuff or we stay out of it. And the Judiciary Committee decided
to jump in.
And
I'd like to jump up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as the Judiciary version with your amendment now reads, we have jumped into limiting the tenure of people in the United States Congress. We've limited the amount of terms. I would suggest that if we're going to put the tenure of legislators back in, we should also put the tenure. We should treat them the same. If we're going to allow, or it would seem fair to me, if we're going to grandfather in or start the clock running in the future as opposed to retroactively counting past service, that we should apply that same standard across the board. I don't think it would be good to only adopt Section 29 and not adopt Section 30 of the old Section 3.
Well, but we have my amendment did not. It only applies to lines 1 through or 7 through 11. Only apply to elections of members of the legislature, not the House of Representatives.
But Representative Boyer, if you look on page 1 of the Judiciary version at line 14,
correct.
That doesn't that remain in the bill?
Yes.
So that issue is addressed. You're limiting the terms of the United States Congress people. I'm just suggesting that if we're going to, how we're going to handle the, when does the clock begin running, we ought to treat those the same for the legislative. Everybody that's in the amendment should be treated the same, is my opinion. We could take them out altogether and not even deal with the congressional.
I think we should.
That was going to be my question. I would suggest we consider removing Section 2 in the judiciary and then adding the Section 29 part of Section 3 of the original into the judiciary.
In a title amendment also?
Yeah, and remove the, just leave it with the state legislature.